Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 88. I'm Jim Cornell and this is the weekly podcast from LaBiotech. Last week we looked at the potential for the use of psychedelics in a variety of treatments, and one of those was for schizophrenia. This week we're going to take an in-depth look at what's in the pipeline for schizophrenia treatments, as 2024 looks like being a big year on that front. To tell us more is Cliona McSweeney, SOSE Heptara's GPR52 program leader, who is working on schizophrenia treatments. The company has partnered with Boehringer Ingelheim to develop first-in-class treatments targeting all symptoms of schizophrenia.
I wonder if you could run through some of the background on schizophrenia, because it's a term that most people know, but probably if you asked somebody what schizophrenia was, they may have a hard time describing it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Jim. I mean, I guess I would talk about the kind of symptoms involved in schizophrenia firstly, and these fall into three clusters mainly. I mean, the first cluster is probably the things people are most familiar with. So the positive symptoms, or psychosis, as we call it. So this is the hallucinations, delusions, paranoia that you'll see occurring in patients with schizophrenia. But there are also two other clusters of symptoms that are actually really important and impact patients' lives. So one of those is the negative symptoms. And I think of these as being a little bit depression-like. So that kind of social withdrawal that can occur, a kind of general apathy that people feel. And then the third set of symptoms is around cognitive dysfunction. And here you see a real impairment in attention, in memory, and in particular planning. So planning out your day, planning your tasks, and that really impacts patients' lives. And often, interestingly, actually, it can be the cognitive impairments that are the first symptom to present. And these are often what the patients will come to the physician about. And I really believe that, you know, in looking at these symptoms and early treatment of these symptoms can be very helpful in treating schizophrenia. Schizophrenia, I think, I don't know if people realise, I mean, it's fairly high prevalence. It's actually 0.5% of people worldwide who are affected by schizophrenia. And it actually has a very high mortality risk as well. So it's one of the highest across the psychiatric disorders. And patients' lives are shortened on average by about 15 to 20 years. So really, it's quite a complex disorder and very serious one. And we were actually very lucky in our company. Recently, we had a volunteer who kindly came in to speak to us from the charity Rethink. And they talked to us about schizophrenia, the symptoms and the challenges for patients, and the challenges as well that the treatments can present to the patients.
How do you get schizophrenia? Is it genetic?
There are genetic aspects to it. We think of it as a neurodevelopmental disorder. So something that really is occurring, so changes in the brain that are occurring from very early on. A lot of research has been done into the genetic aspects. Things like viral infections can also play a role. There's still a lot to be understood in how it develops in the first place.
What are the standard treatments currently and how effective are those?
The current treatments fall into kind of two categories. So the first generation antipsychotics, as we call them. So these are the typical antipsychotics. So these include things like haloperidol, chlorpromazine. And then there are the atypical or second generation antipsychotics, which include the likes of Abilify, Risperdal, Seroquel. I mean, fundamentally, these treatments all act through the same mechanism, which is modulation of the dopamine D2 receptor. They're all kind of, I guess, different flavors of the same medication. There are different treatment regimens. So these can be taken as an oral daily tablet, for example, or there are also the long-acting injectables. And the choice of treatment will typically be based on a discussion between the patient and the physician psychiatrist. Things that will be taken into account are the range of symptoms that the patient is displaying, and also thinking about the side effects that can occur with these treatments.
Why is schizophrenia such a challenging condition to treat?
Well, I mean, I would say that one of the first challenges is actually diagnosing schizophrenia in the first instance. So, you know, as I mentioned, there's quite a range of symptoms that occur in schizophrenia, but these symptoms also crop up in other disorders. So, you know, there's an overlap there. So trying to distinguish what are the symptoms that are really caused by schizophrenia as opposed to another disorder can be a challenge in itself. And then patients will also often have comorbid conditions, and this will also complicate the diagnosis. Another reason that makes schizophrenia so challenging to treat is the different clusters of symptoms that we talked about earlier. So whereas the current medications can maybe effectively treat some of the positive symptoms, they actually really do not effectively treat either the negative or the cognitive symptoms. And even within, I would say, the positive symptoms, there is up to about 30% of patients who do not respond well to the treatments. And then, of course, you have the side effects, which I referred to earlier. So these include things like motor symptoms, such as tremor or stiffness that can occur after a certain period of treatment. There's hyperprolactinemia that can occur, and then there's weight gain. And the weight gain can be really quite significant, and patients don't like this. So what happens is patients don't want to take the medication. You see very poor compliance among the patients. And of course, if you're not taking the medication, then you're not going to see the efficacy that you need.
Having read up a little bit on schizophrenia and schizophrenia treatments, it seems like 2024 is going to be a fairly big year. I wonder why 2024 seems to be shaping up to be a big year for treatments.
Yeah, I mean, 2024, you're absolutely right, is a really exciting year for treatments for schizophrenia. All of the current treatments act really through the same mechanism. As I mentioned, it's the inhibition of the dopamine D2 receptors. So you'll see some of these treatments that have some activity at various serotonin receptors as well. But really, what's exciting about 2024 is that we're finally seeing some treatments coming through that show completely different mechanisms of action. I think this is going to be better for efficacy in patients. I'm hopeful that we'll see efficacy in patients who do not respond to the current treatments. And then there'll be different safety profiles as well that will work better for some patients than the current treatments. So very exciting time for schizophrenia patients and the prescribers.
I know that recently we had an episode on psychedelics, which included treatments for schizophrenia. I wonder if you could tell me what maybe some of the other companies are working on in the schizophrenia area and where those studies are at, and maybe if we start with serotonin and dopamine modulation.
So the current treatments work primarily directly targeting the D2 dopamine receptor. And some of those treatments also act at some of the serotonin receptors, like 5-HT2A, for example. Now, there has been, you know, there have been some efforts around targeting maybe more specifically the 5-HT2A receptor. But, you know, those results are quite mixed at the moment. And then going back to your point about the psychedelics, I think that is just a really exciting area. I think that's actually going to be a game changer in psychiatry. And I would say the focus there with psychedelics for the moment is primarily on affective disorders or mood disorders. But looking at other companies and what's happening in the schizophrenia space, so we have muscarinic modulators coming through from companies like Karuna, Cerevel, and MapLight. And of course, there's Neurocrine as well, who had a licensing agreement not so long ago with Heptares, where they've taken in our portfolio of muscarinic M1 and M4 agonists. So this is really quite exciting.
How does the muscarinic modulation work?
So it actually works in a number of different ways. So if you look at the M4 receptor, for example, that is expressed postsynaptically on the direct pathway medium spiny neurons. So by modulating that receptor, you can get an endocannabinoid-dependent inhibition of dopamine release via nicotinic receptors. But the M4 receptor is also on cholinergic interneurons as an autoreceptor, where it can cause a reduce of acetylcholine release. And then the M4 receptor is also on the glutamatergic inputs as a heteroreceptor. So you can really target dopamine transmission, but through a number of different ways. And then some of these drugs also act at the M1 muscarinic receptor, which is expressed in the prefrontal cortex and other brain regions, where it really modulates cognition and has beneficial effects on cognition. So, you know, I mentioned Karuna, that they're working on this. So they have this KarXT molecule, which is a combination of xanomeline, so a muscarinic agonist, with trospium, which is a peripherally restricted muscarinic antagonist. So this is a way to target the receptors in the brain to look to get those CNS effects, but avoiding some of the side effects which are peripherally mediated. This is the molecule that's furthest ahead in development and will be launched later this year, so that's really exciting. And then Cerevel's molecule emraclidine is currently in phase two studies. So this is an M4 positive allosteric modulator. And then Neurocrine's molecules, which they licensed in from Sosei Heptares, so their M4 agonist is also in phase two trials currently.
What's going on here? I wonder if you could explain excitatory and inhibitory tone and the pipelines in that area.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we know that the balance between excitation and inhibition is crucial for normal physiological function. And we know that the NMDA receptors play a really critical role there. So a number of companies are looking at that NMDA receptor and targeting that more specifically. So it's thought that in schizophrenia, NMDA hypofunction occurs. And this preferentially affects the interneurons, which then leads to greater activity among pyramidal neurons. So this causes an uncoordinated increase in activity, which causes then disruptions to normal coordinated oscillatory activity, which is passed down to subcortical regions and basically acts as noise. And this is where I think the cognitive dysfunction in schizophrenia really comes in. So the companies that are targeting the NMDA receptor are developing molecules really to treat quite focus in on the cognitive impairment associated with schizophrenia. So Boehringer Ingelheim, for example, have a molecule called eclipertin. So this is a GlyT1 inhibitor. So this causes an increase in glycine, which is a co-agonist at the NMDA receptor. Neurocrine have a molecule which is actually a DAAO inhibitor. So this increases D-serine, which is also a co-agonist at the NMDA receptor. So both of these molecules are in phase two, looking to treat the cognitive impairment associated with schizophrenia. And we know that there are other companies that have really quite interesting molecules coming forward, also targeting that excitatory inhibitory balance in the brain.
And I guess the final one would be digital therapeutic and epigenetic modulation.
Yeah, again, very kind of different approaches also to treating different aspects of schizophrenia. So in terms of digital therapeutics, I mean, this is really a growing area. But one nice example, I think, is the collaboration between Boehringer Ingelheim and Click Therapeutics, where they're looking at using a digital therapeutic alongside a pharmacotherapy to treat the negative symptoms specifically in schizophrenia. And going back to what we spoke about earlier, again, these are not well treated by the current medications. So it would be very beneficial for patients to be able to follow this digital approach. And then thinking about epigenetic modulation, again, different targets that companies are looking at here, but a good example is Horizon's molecule, which is currently in phase two. So this is an LSD1 inhibitor. So the lysine-specific demethylase is a histone-modifying enzyme which controls expression of various genes and specifically some of those involved in schizophrenia. So this is in phase two trials for a number of disorders, including the negative and cognitive symptoms in schizophrenia. And I think this is quite nice because this is where you see then precision medicine approaches coming in, and I believe there's work on going to be able to target specific patients that are showing some of these genetic alterations that are associated with this, where we look they would respond particularly well to this mechanism.
You already mentioned Boehringer Ingelheim. Could you tell me about your partnership with them and about your GPR52 agonists, what those are and how they work?
Yes, yeah. So the GPR52 receptor is an orphan G protein coupled receptor, so GPCR, and it's localized in regions of the brain that are really of interest for schizophrenia. So it's a GS coupled receptor. So when you stimulate the receptor, you'll see an increase in cyclic AMP. So the receptor is localized on the medium spiny neurons in the striatum. And when you stimulate the receptor, you would expect to see a similar downstream effect to when you antagonize the dopamine D2 receptor. So again, it's another way of approaching that dopaminergic modulation in those key brain regions. But interestingly, with GPR52, it's also expressed in the prefrontal cortex alongside the dopamine D1 receptor. And there, stimulating the receptor will cause an increase in cyclic AMP again, which you would also see with a dopamine D1 receptor agonist, which we know has beneficial effect on cognition. So we're very optimistic that this is a great way to target all three of the symptom clusters in schizophrenia. So controlling the psychosis or the positive symptoms through its activity in the striatum, but also being able to tackle the cognitive symptoms through its activity at the prefrontal cortex. You know, we know that Boehringer have a real interest in this target, and we're really excited to collaborate with them. So they have taken an exclusive option to license our GPR52 program. And the molecule, our lead molecule, is currently in phase one clinical trials. And of course, we've got various backup molecules at earlier phases as well. So very promising collaboration.
You've given us a great overview of all the different, what different companies are doing and of the schizophrenia space in general. What advantages do your treatments have?
So I think, you know, GPR52 agonists represent another novel approach to treating schizophrenia. And the important thing here is having choices for patients based on the symptoms that they're showing. This is another different approach to modulating dopamine function. And so we would hope that perhaps some patients who maybe don't respond to the current therapies may respond to this different approach. So the novelty is an advantage. But what I would also say is that this looks to be a very safe treatment for patients. So we're not seeing, certainly preclinically, we're not seeing some of the effects that you do see with the current treatments that are predictive of those side effects that you see in the clinic. And I think that when you're looking at a very safe treatment, that gives you options that you might not necessarily consider with the current treatment. So, for example, being able to treat patients very early. So, you know, typically when a young person presents with maybe that cognitive dysfunction, with some of those early symptoms suggesting that they're going to go on to develop schizophrenia, I think, you know, it's ideal if you can start a treatment earlier and prevent that full conversion to psychosis. And I know, you know, there is always a reluctance around starting to prescribe some of the current treatments due to the side effects. But with a safe treatment that does not have these side effects, then I think that gives better options to get in with an early treatment for patients.
Because of all of the different treatments that are in clinical trials right now and how busy 2024 looks like being, do you think that we're going to see lots of treatments heading to the market? And what would that mean for physicians and, I guess, ultimately the end patients?
Yeah, well, it would be great if all of these treatments make it through all of the clinical trials and right through to launch. I think that's good for patients. It's excellent for psychiatrists to have this toolkit to be able to offer to their patients. But of course, you know, let's see how the coming years pan out. And I think that for the moment, we're still probably seeing a kind of trial and error approach in prescribing. So psychiatrists will have their first line treatments that they will use. And then depending on whether they see efficacy with that, they'll then move on to a second and third choice. I'm very optimistic that in the coming years, we'll move towards a precision psychiatry approach. So being able to use certain kinds of biomarkers to really find the best treatment for the patient. But this is something that I think we'll need to see how this evolves in the coming years.
Do you think that, again, looking further down the road, as more and more treatments become available, does that mean that those treatments will be standalone, or do you envisage some of these more novel treatments being able to be used in conjunction with other treatments?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, you know, some of these treatments that are maybe targeting very specifically the cognitive and negative symptom aspects of schizophrenia will probably be used as an adjunct treatment on top of an existing therapy. So in an ideal world, you know, you could treat the patient, get the positive symptoms under control, and then have additional therapy that's safe, that can be used in combination, that would just help to really fully treat that full range of symptoms in patients. You know, some of these treatments that are coming forward, we hope we'll be able to use also as a standalone therapy. So, you know, if you have a mechanism that can control the positive symptoms through activity in the striatal areas, as well as the cognitive and negative symptoms, then those will be taken forward as standalone approaches.
Are we heading maybe towards being able to cure schizophrenia, or are we just looking at managing and removing symptoms?
I think a cure would be ideal. And the only way that I see us being able to get to that point is, I think, if we can really look at early intervention. You know, if we can get better at diagnosing patients early and starting treatment as early as possible. So again, focusing in on the cognition, which presents quite early, and starting treatment early and looking to prevent that full conversion to psychosis. I think that's, you know, as close as maybe we can, we'll be able to get to a cure as such.
And will the treatments, I mean, for example, the one that you're working on, will that be something that people would have to take on a frequent basis?
Generally, yes, with antipsychotics, once the diagnosis has been made and treatment starts, it's usually a treatment for life. You know, maybe again, if early intervention can be introduced and more of a preventative approach, then there may be opportunities to look at being able to stop that treatment. But I think those are things we'll have to work out as we go through the clinical trials.
Where are you at currently with your work in terms of clinical trials and the path to commercialization?
Well, so our GPR52 agonist has started phase one trials last year, in June of last year. And we're really excited, you know, to partner with Boehringer Ingelheim. And we're hoping this will continue through and that our molecule will be taken through into patient trials. And that'll be very exciting. And then in terms of other molecules, so I mentioned earlier our collaboration with Neurocrine, who've licensed our muscarinic agonists. So actually, we retained the rights to develop our muscarinic M1 agonists in Japan for any indication. So that's something to look at for the future. So we know that obviously in Japan, there's an aging population. And one thing we can look at there is targeting the cognitive symptoms of various neurodegenerative diseases.
I guess it's not just schizophrenia that you're working on. There are lots of other things in the pipeline for the company.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, neuroscience is one of our key therapeutic areas, but we also have molecules in across other therapeutic areas, including gastrointestinal disorders, immuno-oncology, for example. So we've got a broad portfolio.
And I guess there's going to be a name change for the company as well?
Yes, exactly. That's coming up quite soon. So we're undergoing a rebranding process. And our new name as of April will be Nexera, which we're all very excited about. So this is really a reflection, I think, of the evolution of our company. And maybe worth mentioning that recently we acquired Idorsia's pharmaceutical business in Japan and APAC, so ex-China. And that achieves one of our key strategic objectives, so really establishing the company as a fully integrated Japan-focused business.
Is there a conference where you meet on schizophrenia and get to talk with all of the other companies that are working on not necessarily the same niche within schizophrenia, but do you get to present at conferences on this and learn about what else is going on?
Yes, we do. And I find conferences a really great opportunity to learn a lot from other experts in the areas. One conference that comes to mind that's completely schizophrenia focused is the CSIRS conference, which takes place in Italy. That's a really great conference, which is attended by both academics and people from biotech and pharmaceutical companies. It's a good opportunity to present our work and then to learn what other companies are doing in the area. So some key opinion leaders that are there as well to facilitate the discussions. And then, of course, there's the more general neuroscience conferences. So Society for Neuroscience is an obvious one that comes to mind. So 30,000 attendees. So plenty of people talking about schizophrenia as well as all the other CNS disorders. So I've been attending that conference quite regularly over the past number of years. And we've certainly presented on our GPR 52 programme at those conferences.
Some great information there about the many potential treatments in development for schizophrenia. Let's hope as many as possible make it all the way, and that the many people globally suffering from the various forms of schizophrenia can get the treatment they need. Don't forget to check out the latest news and articles at labiotech.eu, and I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening. And I hope you'll join us again next time for another Beyond Biotech.